The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Catherine Shaw, and before we hear the show, we just wanted to point you in the direction of our sponsor, Squarespace. For more information on building your own beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. Now on with the show.
Hello, and welcome back to The Guardian Film Show, in which a bunch of unwashed, leery critics slob out on a couch and talk trash about the movies, fueled only with a diet of kebabs and crisps, popcorn and alcohol. You know, it's how we were raised, and by God, it's how we're going down. Coming up on this week's show...
I thought just like you did.
Troubled youth runs amok in the grungy coming-of-age drama King Jack.
Jack! It's me, Ashka.
Natalie Dormer takes a stroll through haunted woodland in the forest.
Miss Jess, want to see you.
We gotta find this guy before Jess does.
And Nicole Kidman, Chiwetel Ejiofor, and Julia Roberts all find that they have a secret in their eyes. But our first port of call is Grimsby, the latest big screen outing from the British comedian Sacha Baron Cohen. In the past, he's tackled the fashion industry with Bruno, American Idiocy with Borat, and on this occasion, he's heading right down to Benefit Street.
Goodbye, Nobby.
Sebastian is now an MI6 killer, an agent of the status quo. Nobby, by contrast, is an incorrigible work-shy scrounger, still living at large in his grim hometown. They're reaching across the class divide and knocking the system on its arse.
Get off me!
I'm joined on the couch by Peter Bradshaw and Henry Barnes. Peter, I know you've been a big fan of Sacha Baron Cohen in the past.
Yes.
Does this one measure up?
No, it doesn't. I still am a huge fan of Sacha Baron Cohen. And I think this film arguably is worth the price of admission for the now legendary elephant scene.
Already legendary.
It is already legendary. Everybody I know who's seen it thinks that it's legendary. And it kind of is legendary. There was a time, though, when Sacha Baron Cohen... Of course, this is outrageous... But he used to be outrageous and clever and funny, and it all went together. This is just outrageous, as in gross out. That's all it is, really, frankly. I think he's losing it a bit with character comedy. It seems to be going down. Bruno was less good than Borat. The Dictator was less good than Bruno. And this, I'm afraid, is really pushing it. It's pretty weak. And sometimes his earlier movies, they were Hollywood movies, and they were very smart indie Hollywood movies. Mm. This, worryingly, is much more of a Brit film. It reminded me, in the sort of tone of weird sadness and depression that settled on me, a bit like a kind of late period Carry On or a filthy version of Spice World, the movie, a bit.
Wow.
Don't worry, that didn't come out my bum.
Oh.
But that one did.
No problem.
And you've got Mark Strong, who is a very, very, very good straight actor. But that's a very different thing from being a very good straight man in a double act. Yeah. It's a very different technique. Mark Strong, like the trooper he is, he comes on and he plays it straight, like he would if he was in an action movie. And Louis Leterrier, who's the director here, he's an action guy.
Yeah.
He delivers the action scenes, but he delivers the comedy in the same plonking way. Bang, 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 bang. There's no question of him working with the actors. And sometimes Sasha's voice work is a little bit off. I mean, his northern accent is off sometimes. It's just the characterization. All those things which Sacha Baron Cohen was so punctilious about, that he would improv it and improv it.
Well,
so
it was just astonishing how he would be able to stay in character.
That he would stay in character.
In a real world situation.
Yeah, he would stay in character in a live ammo situation in the most extraordinary way. Here, frankly, his characterization, frankly, is off.
How hard is it?
Well, okay, let me try and remember. I mean, the top of it is, you know, very hard, actually painfully so. Mm. Then kind of medium soft. And at the base of it, really hard again.
Henry, don't you think that his comedy works best when it has that interface with real people, where the satire is about their ignorant responses to him? Whereas here it's obviously just stage managed, isn't it? It's a fiction.
Yeah, and when it's a satire, I'm not sure about it being his best comedy being comedy for clever people. I think
it's both, right? It's comedy for clever people, but then it also had the catchphrases of Borat in particular,
which
took hold of the popular imagination, which is what he does best. And I totally agree with you that Nobby's just a very, very see-through, vague character with these kind of bit parts for people like Gabourey Sidibe as well,
who's
kind of thrown
away
in this, who's normally very funny as well. Yeah. And also, I was really disappointed that the class thing isn't made more of. These are two brothers who've been separated when they were 6 and 8, I think it was, and he's the older brother. And the whole film, the point about it, if there is supposed to be a wider real-world point, is that working class people are exploited by the upper classes and upper middle classes, but that's okay. They've still got the heart of gold, which is a kind of cliched point in itself, but is the one true thing that the film clutches onto. And they don't really explore that. You'd expect Sebastian and Nobby not actually to get on that well at all. You'd think that Sebastian would look down on his brother and be like, well, you're just scum. Why am I even bothering with you? So there's a real missed opportunity.
Is it a satire on those attitudes?
It might well
towards
be.
Towards working class scum, or is it inviting us to laugh at these people?
There's been some talk that it might be a satire of the people who produce that poverty porn, where they basically say that all working class people are like this. If so, it's, you know, where's the line drawn? Yeah, it could be that, or it could be sex.
That is a very, very,
you know, it's very difficult to see the difference.
It's a very generous interpretation of this film, frankly. I see it, but I think it's a very generous interpretation, and I don't buy it for a single moment. I think basically it's just a way of creating an action comedy version of a comedy character, the comedy football yob, who seems to have come from the 80s or the Britannia 90s or even the 80s. I mean, when I first heard about this, I thought, is it going to be a sort of Ron Burgundy fish out of water thing where he's a football hooligan, to use that quaint old term, who doesn't realise that the world's moved on? Well, no, not really. He's just supposed to be a bit like that. He's just, him and his Barmy army are going to the World Cup and England are in the final of the World Cup. I mean, there's something so depressing about that. Making that
maybe
up.
That's just, satire.
Yeah, that's the satire. I don't know. I mean, I still hugely admire Sacha Baron Cohen as this extraordinary kind of figure with his extraordinary career, the biggest career in kind of comedy crossover since Peter Sellers, in a way. It's amazing. And Borat is amazing satire, but it was brilliant. It was outrageous because it was brilliant and because it was challenging. His satire on correctness and liberal correctness and anti-Semitism. I mean, it really was dangerous. Now we've got gags about infecting Harry Potter with HIV, which is, gross out, outrageous. I like it, sure, but so what in the end?
I didn't know what Daniel Radcliffe had done to hurt their feelings quite so much.
Have you seen some of those?
Work afterwards. But it's pretty vicious towards
pretty
Daniel
vicious.
Radcliffe,
I mean,
without reason,
weird.
As far as I can see.
No, has he come to his natural lifespan in terms of the characters that he has invented that then go out and meet real people?
I think that happened a long time ago, really. I mean, I think the Dictator and this are straight fictional comedy characters. I think...
His USP is gone then, hasn't it?
I think he's still a good actor. He still could create funny stuff. But I think this material, which is a real Brit film, I found very, very weak. I didn't think his heart was in it, to be honest with you, some of the time.
It might also be that he's maybe too well known to do the comedy that he used to
do. He can't do it.
He can't do a Borat dinner scene anymore.
It's the Chris Morrison.
Or Harrison Ford, him going up to him as Bruno and Harrison Ford telling him to fuck off. It's a brilliant moment that he's done because he's got the balls to literally...
That's his exclusive interview.
Go up there and get it.
Harrison
and
Ford.
God, we miss those moments, right? And maybe this is what he's now had to resort to make in a strange sense. But there's still room in there for some real-world point and some real-world political satire. And it's a shame that he kind of dropped the ball.
Yeah, I think he has a little bit. I mean, there are people that like this film because it has got laughs in it and it is sort of outrageous, and the elephant bukkake scene is, I mean, they go for it 1,000%.
It's really struck a chord with you.
It has. Well, it is, it's a big comedy moment and you've got to hand it to them. You know, it's the only really interesting thing about the film, to be honest with you. And it is an extraordinary scene and you do have to give it to him.
You sure this location is secure?
Trust your brother.
How do these people know I was here?
I put it on a local internet service called Twitter.
No one will ever find you here.
That's Sacha Baron Cohen providing a scattershot satire with Grimsby. And after all that ribald elephant malarkey, you may feel the need for a bit of peace and quiet and maybe a lonesome walk in the woods. Don't.
Jess, is that you?
Natalie Dormer is Sarah on the trail of her twin sister, Jess. Now, Jess is at large in the Okigahara Forest, a notorious suicide hotspot where ghosts and ghouls are said to whisper amid the leaves.
Hey, wait!
Assuming she doesn't leave the path or stay out after dark, she may just come out alive.
Please!
Henry, the Okigahara Forest is having a bit of a moment in the movies, isn't it? There was the great Gus Van Sant film, Sea of Trees, at Cannes last year, which for some reason hasn't got a distribution deal.
I can't imagine why. I talk about a real-world situation that's completely squandered. I think that the horror of these kind of films is in the details, right? The details of the forest is actually fascinating, the idea that people go off there, sometimes pitch a tent because they're not certain whether they want to die or not. Yeah. So they take time to ruminate on it, and they do things like... with the Minotaur's maze, where they have a string of ribbon that follows behind them, so if they want to find their way back out again, they can. All that stuff is played up here and is done nicely, I have to say, and that is an intrigue to it. And then it's all just shot completely out of a cannon with jump scares and meaningless backstory and horror that is based purely on jump scares. I really resent jump scares. I don't like horror films very much anyway. But when you're playing on my prehistoric brain of adrenaline rush and just throwing something at me because the music's told me it's coming, I really can't stand that because it's an instant.
Why?
It's an instant shock. It's not something that stays with you. Mm. It's not something that is psychological like The Shining and images from that have stayed with me to this day and are purely, properly terrifying. It's just about cheap scares.
It's a cinematic equivalent of like a speedball or something.
Or a dick joke. You know, like a cheap dick joke. Right. One that you're just like, dicks, they're funny. Yeah. But jump scares are scary. And I get really pissed off with films like this that's just used them so often to get an instant response out of me. That's partly my fault, not the film's, but it's also the film's fault. Let me blame that as well.
Hi.
Natalie Dormer is fine. She's carrying her first big film, I guess, since The Hunger Games. She's doing well enough in it. But it's just... And then another problem with it is this idea that Japanese people are all somehow inherently spiritual and mystical. And even the kind of so-called normal Japanese characters in this are slightly strange and weird, and they know the forest, and they're wise and mystical in their own way. And it's kind of bollocks, to be honest with you.
Hen's right, though. It did make me want to see a documentary on this place.
I know. What it does is squander the fact that the Aokigahara Forest is real. And for all that I loathe Gus Van Sant's The Sea of Trees, while I was watching this, I thought, well, there's an advantage to this film. At least it's made up its mind. The problem with Gus Van Sant, he couldn't quite make up his mind. Is it scary or is it sad? Yeah. Oh, I don't really know. At least this makes up its mind, and it's quite unpretentious, and it has some, you know, on a workmanlike level, it's not bad. But... you're right, it could be any forest. I'm sure there's people sitting down who don't realise that it's actually a real place. Mm. They just think it's a scary forest. And there seem to be ropes and ribbons tied around and people appear to have pitched tents. But so what? So absolutely what? Yeah, you're absolutely right. I thought this was going to be quite interesting. It was going to have a kind of, maybe a sort of Blair Witch vibe and use that reality that is still a kind of connoisseur's reality. There still aren't that many people. I didn't know anything about it at all until I saw Gus Van Sant's film. I thought it's going to really build up. We're going to have nothing scary at all in the first 40, 50 minutes in the classic style. But no, as you said, we turn up and we have jump scares, big stabs of music, people's faces turning into grinning skulls and then back to normal. It's pretty lame. I just think you're absolutely right. There's got to be a kind of moratorium on films like this because they are... it's just too easy. It's just far too easy.
The good news is this is the last one that we'll be discussing.
I don't know.
Which is a kind of moratorium of sorts.
That is sad. We've gone back from scary to sad in one hop.
Miss Jess Noyham.
Jess is just your teacher.
I find her here. She said... need your help.
Where is she?
No, trust him.
No, 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 no.
Don't, for the love of God, go down to the forest. Still hunting a film to please both Henry and Peter, we now alight on King Jack, hatched at the Sundance Laboratory and glistening like a newborn chick. Fingers crossed, this one does the job.
If you could pick... Any two superpowers. I know.
King Jack is not a king, he's just your average mixed-up kid, rattling around a deadbeat town with his cousin Ben in tow and a psychotic bully snapping at his heels.
Can I have a cigarette
for me,
by any chance?
No.
Whoa, 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 what did you just...
His elder brother can't save him. Jack has to fight this battle alone.
Ow! Ow, how you talk to me, Scare?
Get off me!
Okay, Peter, I quite like this. I've seen it all before,
And things that come out of Sundance all tend to look a bit like this. They have that kind of stonewashed indie sunset thing going on and lots of aimless kids drifting around town. It's weirdly like a much more approachable and better version of Ryan Gosling's Lost River in that it has kids wandering around, you've got the single mom and a psychotic bully. But this is actually much better, I thought. It doesn't outstay its welcome.
No.
It's very nicely acted. It really grew on me. It's a bit derivative, but it really grew. There are some very nice, very ingenuous, likeable performances. And what I thought was interesting is this bully figure. It's actually more complicated than you think. Can you realise that? Could it be that this bully has himself been bullied in his turn? And I thought there was an interesting point being quite subtly made in this film. So it's not a masterpiece, but I enjoyed it. I liked it. As I say, it was one of the very few types of films in this kind that which doesn't outstay its welcome. It has a kind of novella proportion, and then it goes. And it leaves you with a nice feeling, a very plausible feel-good thing that almost comes out of nowhere, but is entirely entirely works. So, I did like it.
There's a good sense of kind of aimless youth. It reminded me a bit of my own aimless youth. Yeah. That kind of boredom and casual vandalism and the
smoking,
threat of violence.
Smoking,
violence.
Two sexy girls who think...
Yeah, well, that's where it diverged. Yeah.
I think Peter's right that this couldn't be more Sundance if it was covered in snow and checking your ID. It's just... It is so warm and so American in its indie way. And I did actually really like it. It's got a lot of heart, tons of heart. It's kind of... like a weird, like Gummo, but with loads of heart in a strange way that it's looking at small America and what we do in the shadows of those kind of neighbourhoods. I thought the lead was really great.
Charlie Plummer.
Very good. He's really good. And considering the script can be, Felix Thompson's script can be a little bit wordy sometimes and a little bit too much of exposition of what a character is feeling at a particular time, he does a really nice job of tying that all together. And there's a lot of weight on him in terms of carrying the screen. It is. It's great. It's a lot of heart. It's quite funny in parts. And it's not, Peter's right, it's not too ambitious. It doesn't overreach itself.
No.
Tips into melodrama towards the end a bit.
A little bit, whereas it relies too much, like a lot of films, on violence to provide the voltage of beatings up and savage, retributive revenge beatings up. But as I say, weirdly, I think that's offset by the interesting thing that's going on with the older brother figure and the idea that maybe he is the bully that's kind of started.
Michael Madsen's son.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, it does look like
that. It really does.
That's true. And what's interesting about the movie is it suggests that maybe it's the Lee character's elder brother who actually has started all this. So maybe it's, however horrible Shane is, the bully, maybe he's actually not entirely to blame. But it's a tradition that goes back, I suppose, to, well, in our lifetimes, to David Gordon Green in his Malickian phase, to Malick himself. And I would think all the way back to sort of Huck Finn, in a way, the idea of the aimless kids who are not quite in a Lord of the Flies situation and may, in fact, be in a very positive situation without any... parents or school teachers or any authority figures watching over them. It's very American.
And what it does actually really well is it doesn't overplay the dramas that it holds. So there's a character whose mum has had a psychotic episode and he's had to come and stay with him as his cousin. And those things just happen to these characters. Yeah. And there's almost a rule of the jungle that they just understand. And it's not made into a huge melodrama. And it would be very easy to over-egg this and make it too rich. And it doesn't do that at all.
Yeah, it's a really crisp, clean film. They're just coping with their lot.
What's going on.
Yeah.
When I was little, my dad put me on his shoulders, carried me all throughout the house, saying I was the king of everything.
Yo, Skip! Stay down! And chill!
An audience with King Jack there. Just time for one last film before they turn out the lights. This one is a Hollywood remake of an Oscar-winning Argentinian thriller. It stars Chiwetel Ejiofor, Nicole Kidman, and Julia Roberts, and it's called The Secret in Their Eyes.
You know, you could just ask her out.
In the wake of 9/11, a teenage girl is found dead in a dumpster beside a mosque. Chiwetel Ejiofor's FBI investigator believes that he might have a lead, but paranoia is rife and wider forces are at play. The establishment is watching. It's got something in its eye. Henry, it's a remake of a 2009 Argentinian Oscar winner that, dare I say, I thought was a little bit overpraised to begin with.
I have to say, I haven't seen the original.
Don't.
Apologies. But it must have been pretty good because it beat White Ribbon and Un Profeta.
I know. Well, that's, I think that's what I hold against it.
Oscar. Well, surely the Oscars give it to the best film.
Yeah, I know. So there must have been
some. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, but as coming as somebody who hasn't seen the original, this just feels like a kind of diet David Finch American psychological thriller with a bit of extra star power, I guess. I mean, the cast is kind of incredible. Mm. They're all pretty crap, got to be honest. Chiwetel Ejiofor, I don't buy him as a grizzled FBI detective one little bit. Nicole Kidman, sometimes I wonder if I'm watching like an Ex Machina Alan Turing test style thing of, is this a robot that they've constructed for the film, or is this Nicole Kidman actually
maybe
herself?
Maybe she died like 10 years ago.
She did.
Virtual reality.
Or her luster did. I don't know. Something is really off in this. She's supposed to be the kind of the love interest that has driven somebody to basically carry on after a catastrophic, tragic thing has happened to them and to a friend of theirs. And you just don't believe that she'd be worth
no
coming back
chemistry
20 years
between
later.
Her
None
and
zero.
To the None point where all the other characters have to keep commenting on the spark between them.
You
so
guys
we
are
know
really
it's there.
In love.
And they have to, and that means that Chiwetel and Julia Roberts, who's actually very good in this,
She's
in a
good.
Very small,
yeah.
very difficult role.
Yeah.
They have to play up their chemistry together. So you get this weirdo situation where it's almost like they're romancing each other rather than he's romancing Nicole Kidman.
The whole triangular dynamic is gone.
Totally.
From the word go.
The dynamic of any kind of chemistry is just completely off and weirdly kind of almost incestuous in a strange way, even though they're not related.
This shifts it from the backdrop of the 70s Argentine junta to 9/11 paranoia.
Just 1 year after 9/11. I actually like the Argentinian tour. I thought there was lots of interesting things going on in it. And I would call this a kind of honourable failure in that the guy, Billy Ray, has obviously sat down. He obviously is interested in the first film and has tried to change it in an interesting way. He hasn't just tried to reproduce it. He's changed it. The original film didn't have two women and a man. It had the central, thwarted, slightly tragic romance. And the third character, the third wheel, was his mate, his drunken, stupid partner, buddy, whose job it was to get drunk and denounce the junta and to, as it were, effectively to ventriloquise our views about the junta in the 1970s. Mm. That character has now been turned into a woman. It's been turned to Julia Roberts. And it, as you say, it's a very good, rather courageous performance from Julia Roberts, who looks older and more careworn than I've ever seen her before. So it's quite out there. But as you say, there's no chemistry between Nicole and Chiwetel. The chemistry is all between, weirdly. If only he was in love with Julia Roberts, everything about this would make more sense in a way. But it's not. He's got to be in love with her. And it's an oddity in the original film because the idea of a rather sweet, almost asexual, unrequited crush is so odd and so sweet in the film, and its juxtaposition with such horrible stuff with the disappeared ones of 70s Argentina. Mm. It's made it so unusual. Then you'd have a hard job reproducing that.
Yeah.
And they've done something interesting, tried to get the noirish idea that a political situation can be used to cover up a non-political crime.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and they've really tried to do that, but it doesn't quite work because in the original, they are out and out against the junta. The junta is just evil, whereas now their attitude towards Homeland Security is, perforce, much more kind of complicated. Mm. They're not against it in the same way. So the idea of the flashback, the old wounds reopened, the cold...
And the small crime amid a vast wider crime.
So the idea of the cold case that you could suddenly heat up to boiling point after all these years, all these things, I don't think that'd quite work. But it's a shame. I don't want to just trash this film because I thought there were interesting things. It was an interestingly intended film. And I thought Julia Roberts actually was quite watchable in it, but totally adrift. Totally, the triangular dynamic of the first film has been messed about with, and it just doesn't work, I don't think.
Ray, what is it?
It's Carol. It's your daughter.
What?
It's mom. Help me!
And from the secret in their eyes to the tears in our own, just when I'm getting these links down right, it's time to go. Time for the Guardian Film Show, at least in its current video form, to pass off into legend and become nothing more than a tale to scare children on those long winter nights. In the meantime, eternal thanks to the Guardian film team, Catherine, Ben, Peter, Andrew, and Henry. Thanks to you for watching. Thanks for all your comments. It's been a privilege. We're not back next week.
Cheers. We'll be right back.
Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you want to build a website, you have many options. But if you want to build it beautiful, there's only one. Squarespace gives you the power of world-class design, so you can do more than create a website. You can set yourself apart. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands, and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/guardian.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.